Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
We don't want to waste your time, so we won't. Vuse is vapor done right. Simple, sleek, stylish. Because when you find a vape that goes with everything, everything just clicks. Find Vuse at your local convenience store down the block.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Got a great show in store for you. It's going to be sunny and 70 degrees today. No complaints. Get the temperature back up, although it will go back down again over the weekend. But going to be a nice day. Hope you get to enjoy it. Hope you're already having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick holding fort like he's been for the last almost 2 months in East Nashville. Chase McCabe over in Bellevue on the west side of town. Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com.
Guys, is today, is today the two-month anniversary of us doing the shows from home?
It's got to be... No.
Not quite.
It's got to be
quite.
Close. It's got to be quite. Close.
I feel like I haven't seen you 12th. Guys in years, so...
12th is when we came home from Toronto... Right, and then we did, what, about a week of shows? A little less than a week of shows?
The first show was Thursday, the following Thursday. So the first game that was canceled was on a Thursday for the Predators in Toronto. So it was a week
later.
Yep,
that was March 12th.
Okay, that's right.
So the 19th, is that right?
Yeah, that seems...
That sounds right.
Okay,
That was the first show at home?
So not quite. So we're not quite there yet. It feels like it. I've lost all track of time. You know, Darren, I don't remember what you or Willie look like. I think I've seen Marquise once in that time. I think
Chase's
how to
beard has gotten Chase's beard has gotten very thick.
Yeah,
I've
my beard's
that.
Legit. My
you
beard
look
is
like
legit.
Roethlisberger for sure.
Well, this is what I can't decide because I've had some people say, "Hey, I like it." You know, is that just the quarantine beard? And I say, yeah, I figure I won't do anything with it until this is done and I can, you know, start leaving the house and going to work and all that. And then I'll shave it off. And then some people are like, yeah, remember that mistake you made when you grew your hair out? This is kind of along those lines. So mixed bag right now.
Wow. Okay.
A mixed bag. Okay.
Well, there's a real good chance that I'll look like myself starting on Monday because I was watching intently. And you say, why? Why would you watch intently on what Mayor John Cooper was going to say? Because you live in Rutherford County. Fair point. But my stylist lives in Davidson County, and that's where I get my hair cut. And it looks like phase one is, according to the mayor, is set to take place starting on Monday. Which, does anybody have the phase one in front of them? That they're willing to...
I am trying to... pull that up.
Well, the key is 50% capacity for restaurants and retail with face coverings. Continue to work at home if possible, and obviously if you're sick, stay home. That's the gist of it, but there's more details than that for sure, but those are the basics.
We're going to have Alex Apple join us at noon today from Fox 17, and he's been talking with both the mayor and the governor, and certainly good timing to have him on today with the news coming out this morning. So I know it's somewhere.
I have it in front of me.
You have it. Okay.
Yep. So here we go. All residents age 65 and older, stay home, and high risk, stay home. All work from home if possible. All residents wear masks in public. Schools closed. No gatherings over than 10. Restaurants and bars serving food open at half capacity, clean everything, employees screen daily and required to wear face masks, bar areas closed, no live music. Bars and entertainment venues remain closed. Retail stores and commercial businesses open at half capacity, employees screen daily and wear face masks. Now, Darren, I have some bad news for you. nail salons, hair salons, massages, etc., they will remain closed in phase one.
If phase one?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. So you will not be going to see your stylist on Monday to get your
wow.
hairs cut.
That's disappointing.
Healthcare
That's
and
very disappointing.
Healthcare and dental routine and elective procedures. Under the age of 70, employees screen daily and wear masks. Gyms and fitness centers, playgrounds, tennis and basketball courts, and sports venues all closed.
Well,
you get your hair salon in phase two.
Yeah, I don't know.
So gotta get to phase two.
I may have to cheat on her. I don't know. I've been going to her for a long, long time. The Weppers go to her as well. She cuts both Pete and Claudia's hair. I've been going to her for a long time, and I don't want to have to cheat on her. But I was like, this morning, first thing I thought of was perfect time. Like, I'm right at the brink, like where I'm going, like, I really, really need a haircut. And then I was feeling good, and then you just, I thought for sure it was going to include that in phase
one.
Hey,
I'm just the messenger. Okay?
Look, I can get my haircut here in Rutherford County. We got no issues right now. The salon, they're open.
Hey, I'll come see.
They're wearing masks. They're open.
I'll come out there. We'll go together. I'll get the beard trimmed, and you can get your hairs done.
Your hair's done.
Yeah, I don't know why I said that. It's been a long time since.
So, are you? Is that you admitting that you're ready too?
I'm ready. Yeah, I think I'm done with the caveman beard.
Yeah.
I mean, I always have a beard, so, I mean, that's not going away, but just needs a little trim.
I know I can do that here,
but they do a
– Yeah, you could do that at home, Chase. The haircut is a different deal.
Yeah, well, I could, but it looks better when they do it because they even everything.
But I had a chance to watch the press conference with the mayor, and Dr. Jahangir came in there. Dr. Schaffner from Vanderbilt, who you've probably seen on almost every national network, as well as local here. And they stress the same thing. You know, this is phase one, right? This is a great start. We have to do this right so that we can get to phase two and we don't have to go back, right? But let's not open the floodgates and just go crazy, right? Let's take it one step at a time. That's so important. But this is great news. Right?
Is let's open up salons let's, going crazy. Is that really going crazy? You're opening up restaurants, but salons is going crazy.
Hey, Marquise, I'm going.
Can we get the mayor? I'm going on? With Darren's got to ask him some questions.
Come on.
I'm going with the health experts on this one, Darren. I'm not
getting a massage. You know, really? That's going crazy. Really?
Yeah, my afro.
When open up the restaurants, it's okay.
My afro has a few questions for the mayor myself.
Dude,
have an afro. What is the level you're at, Marquise, right now?
Look, I have not bought a pick for my hair since middle school, and that's how bad it's gotten. I have to buy a pick for my hair and like pick it out like an afro. And I leave it in there, too. Like, it's bad. So, yeah, we need to – phase two, we need to hurry up.
Who did you say you look
okay,
like?
Okay, so let's execute phase one. Let's execute phase one. Let's have that be our motivation to get to phase two as quickly as possible.
Well, first I thought I looked like a microphone. And then I looked like – and then I thought I looked like Josh Childress, who played for the Atlanta Hawks for a while.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, man, that's where it's going right now.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
So if that was not the pitch of all pitches to say, come on, squeeze salons and barbershops into phase one, what are you talking about? Come on. You got to do it. People need haircuts.
Bad.
Chase, right now if you see his beard, it's kind of like a scene out of Dumb and Dumber. If you remember when they went to go get their nails done, I kind of feel like that's what trimming your beard is going to look like.
Okay,
it's
I'm going to tweet
gonna be hair
for those of
everywhere.
You because this is radio. I'm taking a picture and going to tweet it out so you can. If those of you that have not seen the beard, what we're working with right now. So I will post that in a second.
In all seriousness, did I not say this yesterday? Did I not say these exact words? I'll be very curious to see how the mayor handles this moving forward because there's a lot of people with a lot of pull. In downtown Nashville that are starting to get real antsy. Did I not say that yesterday? And I'll be curious to see where this is going. Do what?
I think there were some protests, too, that I saw from some of those people that you were talking about in the downtown, like downtown owners and I mean, I know there have been different protests, but that was something that I was reading in this phase one.
Well, they were starting to go public. I wasn't even talking about protesting. They were starting to go public and starting to squawk publicly. And this just in, those people have some pull. And so I was wondering how the mayor was going to handle it, because they were definitely saying, yeah, okay, everybody's open around us. It's time for us to start moving around. And sure enough, this morning, even though salons and barbershops are not in phase one, it's a good sign for Davidson County. It's a good sign that phase one starts on Monday. By the way, I knew
But they're sticking with the plan, right? This was the gist of the press conference today. They laid out these phases. I think it was probably 2 weeks ago. Remember we were reading off the different phases?
Yes.
It was at least 1 week ago.
Oh, yeah, I've been trying to sift through where I
phase one has been preset.
Yes.
And they cited what had to be done to get into phase one, and today they went through what has happened to get to phase one. So I don't know what influence, you know, the people. I know that once they see stuff around them going on, you want to be like them, but I think they had to stick to the data, and the medical people all said we've hit those levels. In particular, one thing that jumped out that Mayor Cooper said that struck me is from the hospital situation. You know, they've had, for example, the Music City Center ready to go on standby as an extra space for hospital beds, and they obviously haven't needed that. So they feel like right now the caseload is such that the medical areas are under control, not being overwhelmed. That was a huge prerequisite to get to phase one. So that's part of it. The caseload, you know, how many new cases are happening, how many more tests are there. All these were the criteria to get to this. So I'm glad we're there. And so now let's stick with the plan and let's hope we can get to phase two as soon as we can.
Yeah, I hope
Chase
so.
Chase has put up a picture of the beard.
I have.
Yeah, that looks very itchy. Very itchy.
Nah, not too bad, but.
No?
Have you seen, well, I've posted other things, so I guess you've probably seen it. But, and I've done, you know, Facebook Lives, but yeah, that's. It's pretty legit. I've had to trim around my mouth a little bit, otherwise it's just gross. So I have done that, but otherwise I have not touched the thing.
You didn't want a side of hair with all of your meals?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Pass on
that.
Good
idea then to trim that back then. All right, when we come back, we will talk with Mitch Light from The Athletic. He's got a story up on Tim Corbin and James Franklin. We'll get into a lot of stuff with Mitch on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We say hello to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, what's going on?
Good morning, Darren. How you doing, sir?
Good. How's quarantine life for the
great.
Light family?
It's amazing. Couldn't be better. Four of us in the house all the time. It's amazing, Darren. No, it's. I would give my family, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you would have told me 2 months ago that we're going to be in the house all the time, including a college-age daughter who clearly doesn't want to be in the house and a 15-year-old son, I would have probably said we'll probably be about a 4 or 5 out of 10. But I'll give the White family 7.8. I think things are going surprisingly well.
Okay, very good. Good to hear. We're off to a good start.
Yeah, and one thing that helps, and Darren, you are not, you know, I know your son's not old or young, but like, my kids are older, so it's like we don't have to be around them, babysit. They can do their own thing. It's the people that have the two or three kids under 5 and 6 years old. We all love our children, but we don't love them that much that we want to be around them like 24 hours a day.
Boy, you're right about that. You are right, and I know plenty of those families, and you're right. I do. I think, man, oh, we have an 8-year-old, and it's been fine. But, yeah, I could not imagine the 8, 6, 4, and 2-year-old households, right?
Yeah.
And I know those
families.
I don't
even want to think about it.
And you've done all that, right? You're not ready to go back to that.
Exactly.
The University of Tennessee said yesterday that their intentions are to have classes in the fall on campus. That now makes, I believe, 10 schools in the SEC – that has said their intentions are to have classes in the fall on campus. One, why do you think this news is coming out in late April, early May? Why do you think that's being put out there now?
Well, because a lot of schools, like kids, have to commit financially to the fall semester. You know, there's different dates where you have to send in your housing money or send in different kind of deposits and stuff like that. So I think that's a big reason. And I think schools also there's all sorts of contingency plans. What they say publicly is what they hope to do, what they plan to do, but everyone's making contingency plans because we just don't know where we'll be. So I think it's obviously a positive sign, but I just, you know, I'm in the camp that I'm not positive or negative. I just admit that I don't know, and you have to admit that we just don't know where we're going to be in a month or two.
Where is your family in the camp of a lot of people? Because your daughter, did she ended up completing the semester online?
Yeah.
Is that how that worked?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
at Vanderbilt.
Whatever. Start mid-March on online and finished finals last week.
Okay. So if there's been a lot of disgruntled people saying, I don't want to pay full price for classes in the fall. I don't feel like I'm getting the same education. Have you guys had those type of discussions at home? How does your daughter feel about that? And how much do you think that has weighed into some of these decisions to try to get kids back on campus? Because a lot of people are saying, I'm not paying full tuition for virtual classes.
Yeah, I mean it's a fascinating argument, and I see the students and the parents. You know, a big expense of being in college is actually being on campus, housing, secure. It's not just housing and food; it's security that the school has to provide, the police force, everything about it, all the employees and stuff like that. So you know what, Darren, I'm being honest, haven't really thought about it too much. It's one of those things when we have to make a decision on it, we'll think about it some more. If Vanderbilt came to me, my daughter's at Vanderbilt, they came to me and said, hey, we're doing classes online for the first 2 months and not reducing your tuition. Of course, we're going to say that's awesome. If they don't, I think we would still do what we need to do. It's not like we're going to take her out of school because there's only online classes for 2 months or a semester. So these are fascinating discussions, and again, we'll have them when we need to have them, but really haven't thought about it too much yet.
Where do you think we are, since you are on college football sidelines on Saturdays, where do you think we are in the college football landscape of this upcoming fall season?
You know, that I wish I had an answer. I mean, if you told me gun to my head and I had to make a decision right now, I would say a delayed start to the season sometime in October that spills into the new year with limited fans in the stands. But again, you know, there's really smart people that are trying to make all these different plans, Darren, and they don't even know. It's just, and I know it's something we need to talk about. You guys need to talk about it, but it's unprecedented. I mean, we say that word a lot. Things are unprecedented in the sports world. This is truly unprecedented.
Yeah, look, you're right. I wouldn't want to be in those rooms trying to make those decisions, but there's a lot at stake, as we all know, and they're trying to figure it out. And it does – they're in a unique dynamic because they're different than the pro sports, because it looks like the pro sports are trying to figure out plans moving forward and how they're going to operate with new rules and new conditions. But you've got this dynamic of, you know, student-athletes, and – they're not pros, and they're not getting paid, or they're getting paid with a scholarship. So it is a little bit – it's a lot trickier on their side of things, for sure.
No doubt. And, you know, there's a big camp out there that, you know, the pro athletes should be paid, and not even just the, you know, name, image, and likeness, but that they should be paid, and, you know, that these universities are trying to find ways to get them – to play so the universities can get their money, the athletic departments can get their money. You know, I don't necessarily subscribe to that cynical theory. Like, I think if we can figure out a way to make it safe and play with no people in the stands, I think the athletes would want to play if they think they can be safe. That's the game they love. And a lot of them, you know, for themselves professionally down the road, like if you're a rising senior or junior, really good, you want to play football this year. So you get another year on tape and you get drafted next year. Not that you wouldn't get drafted if you're a good player, but I think if I put it this way, Darren, I'm for playing under any scenario that's safe. I know a lot of people say, well, if there's not students or if there's not people in the stands, they shouldn't play. I think if they can play, they should play.
We're talking to Mitch Light, who is writing for The Athletic. And, Mitch, we had Joe Rexroad, your colleague, on yesterday, and we were talking to him about some of the creativity that's going on with The Athletic right now. And it's allowed for some really interesting storytelling. You've got an article out there today that you wrote on the relationship between Tim Corbin and James Franklin. And I think it would be interesting not only to Vanderbilt fans, who obviously are going to want to read this, but even for others that have always followed the Southeastern Conference and looked at Vanderbilt and wondered, you know, can you win there? How do you win there? Why haven't they won there? Because that's the one thing that really has bonded Tim Corbin and James Franklin from the start, is the ability to jump in, change the culture at their respective programs, and win at a place that it's not easy to win at.
Yeah, and I mean, culture is probably one of the more overused words in sports. I was talking to Darren before, we said, you know, unprecedented is a word, you know, we use in our culture. We use a lot and overuse it, and same thing with culture. But I think with these two guys, it really has made a big difference. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes in there, and both guys kind of said it, but I used Maggie Corbin's quote, Tim's wife, said, you know, it was basically the first week there, and James made a beeline to Tim's office and just said, how do you do it? Tell me how you do it. And that's basically how they met each other. And they spent, Franklin spent a lot of time around the baseball program that spring semester. I talk about in the story how obviously his top priority was kind of spring practice and recruiting and setting the foundation, but he was in Corbin's office a lot around practices, knew the guys' names and all that. So, you know, they really fed off of each other. And they, you know, my first year doing sideline reporting, it was one of my first games because I took over in midseason. I remember being at the Wake Forest game late in the year. And, you know, it was Friday night at the hotel and just kind of hanging out. And you see all the coaches, they have meetings, their player meetings, positional meetings, all that stuff. And I see Tim and Maggie Corbin following the coaches into a meeting, and they have their own notebooks, like those three-ring binders. I was like, what's going on there? That, you know, you've traveled with teams. You know, there's people that go on trips and, you know, they might go out to dinner or go to the bar and all that stuff and let the team do their things. Well, Tim Corbin would travel with the team, but he would do all of the stuff that the coaches do. He would go into the meetings. He would take notes. He was just a sponge. He was trying to learn so much about coaching, and he was doing so from a guy who's 10 years younger in a different sport and a first-time head coach. So I thought that was really interesting. Not only was James Franklin trying to learn from Tim Corbin was really eager to learn from James Franklin.
Yeah, and, you know, some people, I'm sure, have done a double take if they're watching a Penn State game in a big whiteout with 100,000 fans there, a night game, and you see somebody that looks like Tim Corbin standing very close to James Franklin. It is Tim Corbin. It's really remarkable. I remember going to a College World Series game and going to my seat in the Vanderbilt section, and I looked over, and there's James Franklin sitting in the aisle right on the other side from me. But it's become so common now that you know, they've continued this years after James Franklin has left Vanderbilt.
Yeah, James Franklin's been in the College World Series all three times since he got the job at Vanderbilt. I think the first year, I don't think he went in 2011, or he might have gone, but he's been the last three times, and this is amazing. I didn't get into the story as much as I would have liked to, just for space reasons, the close relationship between Maggie and Fumi, James's wife. Fumi Franklin and the girls, their two girls, they go to Omaha when Vanderbilt's in it for the whole time. They were there for the whole 2 weeks. So it's not just James going to see. Like, James can only make the finals because of his work, you know, recruiting and stuff going on. But the whole family is there. The whole family partakes in it. And you're right. Like, I think this year College Game Day was at Ohio State for the Ohio State-Penn State game, and they take a picture on the bus, like bus one where the coaches are. They have cameras going in for James Franklin, and Tim Corbin's up there in seat one, right in the front row there. So, and I talked to our Penn State writer at The Athletic and told her I was doing the story, and she's like, yeah, he talks about Tim Corbin all the time, just impromptu in a press conference. He'll just bring up that name. And one other thing, Willie, that's interesting about the two personalities is Tim Corbin said, I go up there, I'm not a fan. I'm there to cheer on I want my friend to do well, so I want Penn State to do well there. But I'm there to learn. I'm on the sidelines. She's like, I can't sit in the stands. Like, you hear that a lot of former players and coaches. They just can't sit in the stands. They want to sit on the sideline. Well, if you watch the College World Series, James Franklin's just a fan. He's sitting there with Maggie and his family cheering him on. So I found that dynamic.
I think I high-fived him at the game I was at. This was 2014.
Yeah, you see that. Maybe that's a part of the dynamic of their personalities, too.
You know, this was another, I thought, poignant point that came out of it, is that head coaches have that common bond where they have a very tight inner circle, where there's really not a lot of people that they can really confide in and talk about some of the inner workings that are going on. That seems to be a big part of their bond.
Yeah, it's funny, Willie. You know, you do these stories, and I have an idea of what I want to ask, and some of the good stuff that comes out come from questions you ask as a reporter, and sometimes they don't. It's like James Franklin, I was just talking to him unprovoked in the middle of the sentence. He's like, you know, one thing that people don't realize is the head coach seat can be pretty lonely. And his point was just like, sort of like you just mentioned. You know, there's certain things that he has to deal with, and he has friends and head coaches, but it's not like he's going to call up the head coach at, you know, Michigan State or, you know, one of his rivals and say, talk about certain things. There's some certain things that are unique to his school and are certain things he just doesn't want to talk about. And maybe certain things he can't talk to his assistants about or doesn't want to or they can't relate. So that was the point there, that both these guys, different sports, but they both sit in the same chair so they can use each other as sounding boards. They understand what the other guy's going through.
What else? We hit Joe with this, but what have the brainstorming sessions been like at The Athletic? Because you've come out with some very unique ones. You've gone back through, for example, Tim Corbin's first year coaching Vanderbilt. You did one on kind of a wacky thing that happened in light of the Earl Bennett excessive celebration penalty, which all Vanderbilt fans still cringe about down in Gainesville years ago with Jay Cutler trying to lead an upset there. But you guys have certainly had to really dig deep, haven't you?
Yeah, and one thing it's done, unfortunately, it's given us the time to tell stories and spend more time on stuff like this that maybe we thought would be a good story if we ever had time. But we do these things we call them blitzes, and the themes that we do across all markets. For instance, this week is the do-over blitz, and you know, Joe Rex wrote a story yesterday on Derek Dooley and how Daniel Hood factored into that. I'm sure a lot of Tennessee fans and any fan should read that great story. But so in Memphis today, our Memphis writer Peter Edmondson wrote something about what if Hasheem Thabeet, what if they could do a do-over there? Remember when in 2009 and the Grizzlies took Hasheem Thabeet, who, you know, none of us are professional scouts, but I think we all knew that was going to be a bust. It was one of the bigger busts in NBA history. But, you know, James Harden goes one spot later. Steph Curry goes one spot later. And then John Hollinger, who's an NBA writer for The Athletic, who used to be with the front office in the Grizzlies, actually wrote one today, too. What if they took Nikola Jokic when they could have taken that? So there's stuff like that where we have sports and media blitz. We're doing something on dominant teams, like each market, what are the 10 best teams in your market historically. So just a lot of stuff like that. What we call evergreen content, and The Athletic, we're still doing well. People are still reading. We appreciate everyone who subscribes and renews. So hopefully we'll have sports to talk about soon, but we got a staff around the country. I think we've done a really good job coming up with ideas to keep some good content on the site.
Hey, I just renewed a couple of weeks ago, so I'm enjoying the content too. So appreciate
Chase,
the hard work.
I love you, Chase.
Hey, I'm here for you, Mitch. Here for you, Mitch.
I loved you before, but you know, now it's just, you know, it's getting stronger.
I appreciate it. Mitch Light of The Athletic here with us, and I want to circle back to where Darren had taken things earlier in the conversation about college football and whether it comes back, because Ryan Porth and I did the 9 o'clock hour this morning and basically turned a 10-minute conversation into almost the whole hour on some comments that started with James Franklin and what he said about that. Listen, if there are schools in the Big Ten that are ready to go, they shouldn't have to wait on other schools that aren't, that, you know, their campuses aren't open, because that hurts the conference. And I said, listen, there's some coach speak there. He's looking like he's going to have a pretty decent team. And I think that those comments could be directed towards, if Ohio can't open, well, stinks for Ohio State, but Penn State's ready to go. What do you think about that? If let's just use the Big Ten. If half the Big Ten is ready to play, then should they play some games and just wait on the rest, or is it an all-or-nothing deal in your mind?
That's a fascinating question, and I will answer in a second. But James Franklin spoke to the media on Zoom yesterday, and that's where all the quotes from. Didn't I see a Franklin comment also that college football, this sort of contradicts what he's saying, unless I totally misread it, that as a sport, that it should be all or one, all or none. Like, if every conference that is ready to play, play if they're not. So was he talking about just getting going on off-season workouts? Did you hear that other comment, yeah, I guess, my question?
Well, from what I heard, the part that I heard was that he had talked to another coach and that another coach was essentially saying that it needs to be an all-or-nothing deal. And then James essentially disagreed with that and that you hurt the conference.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Overall, yeah.
I don't – you know what? This is a bad answer. I don't know how I feel because I think there's really good points on both. Like if you are, you know, even in a more rural area like Penn State is, and it's a smaller town and there's not a lot of cases there and you can safely get your guys together, your 100 players together, why shouldn't you be able to – when Ohio State, Columbus is a huge city and – there's different governances coming down, so I can see his point there, but I can also see the point where the NCAA has certain regulations. There's the 20-hour rule during the season, and just there's certain limitations on practice. So I'm kind of thinking as I go here, but I would say I would be okay with if certain schools could get their act together or were allowed to, of them starting to work out while other schools in the same conference could not.
So let me throw this theory that again, this was a 10-minute conversation that became almost an hour because, like you just said, I was thinking about it, you know, while we're having the talk, and different theories popped in my head. So one thing that I threw out was, let's say that the SEC, that Greg Sankey is like, 10 of our 14 schools are open and ready to go. We can start the season. Four aren't. And then you have, let's say, four schools out of the Big Ten that they're ready to go. Well, those two conferences kind of get together and they say, hey, let's work out a schedule where your four schools can come play with us. And when the rest are ready, then we'll figure that out. But we can start Labor Day weekend and get a schedule, get a schedule going. How crazy of a theory would that be?
Yeah, and I was talking to someone about this yesterday, that I think no matter what happens with the 2020 season or if it's the 2020-2021 season, it's going to be just asterisk-laden, whatever happens. Like, yes, Ohio State won the national championship, but the Pac-12 didn't play, that this season because the school's in California or whatever. Or so-and-so, LSU was the SEC champion, but only 10 of 14 teams participated. My thinking would be, from a conference standpoint, I think starting practice is one thing, but I think it has to be all or nothing within a conference. Now, could five of the 10 FBS conferences decide to play and have a season? Maybe, but I just think it'd be really strange to have not every team in your conference participating. But again, that's just off the top of my head. Haven't thought it through a ton. There's logistical reasons why you should do it and why you shouldn't do it.
And that leads to the biggest question of all, because I hope that this question comes out of all of this, because this is unprecedented. But one thing that Ryan brought up of just the absolute need of a college football commissioner to help with some of this stuff. And so my hope is that some of the conversations that we're having, some of the conversations that these conferences and schools are having, could lead to that there actually be a college football commissioner that can help govern some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's been talked about for years for college basketball too. I mean, I think a lot of fans don't really understand, it's the conferences that run it, the conference commissioners and the school presidents that really have all the power. The NCAA doesn't, it's not like the NCAA can say, okay, SEC, you play. NCAA has no power over which conferences play, what schools do. The NCAA is an organization made up of by its member institutions. I think each sport would need its own czar or whatever president, whatever you call. But again, the structure of the sport would have to change too. You can't just say, okay, Willie Donick's in charge of college football. and then him, you know, as a part of the NCAA, they would have to, again, change the whole dynamic of the sport and be sure he has that power. It can't just be he's a figurehead, because, again, the way it's all structured, that's basically what it would be.
Mitch, good stuff as always. Hey, I think we're getting closer to maybe your daughter and your son saying, man, I think mom and dad are finally going to get out of the house for a little bit. I think that's coming. So you can give them some good news.
We're getting closer to something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. You're right. We're getting close to something. We're not sure what, but something. Hey, thanks for doing this. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. That is Mitch Light. You can find his work at The Athletic. We will touch on that to wrap up the first hour on the other side. What Chase just brought up there at the end with Mitch, we'll discuss here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We know a lot of you are working from home during this coronavirus, and you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app is an option. You can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home. Ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream it from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Okay, good conversation there with Mitch Light from The Athletic. And we're going to talk to Ryan McGee coming up to kick off the second hour of the program from ESPN and SEC Network. But let's talk about something you asked Mitch there at the end of the segment and just kind of go from there. So I'm going to let you set it up, and then we'll talk about it.
Are you talking about the conferences getting together and basically playing?
No,
play,
I'm talking about the commish. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so like I said, and I don't know, how much of the 9 o'clock hour you guys heard. This was one of those, and we have this all the time on this show where we get into our conversation, and it just snowballs and gets different layers. And that was one thing that Ryan and I were discussing. And so I asked Mitch, do you think that some of the conversations happening now, with one conference thinking one thing and another conference thinking the other, and just so many different voices, could that amplify the conversation about getting a college football commissioner? I hope it does. I hope that looking at a negative situation and trying to get a positive out of it, I hope that leads to it, because I believe it needs it. College basketball needs one too. I feel like at this point with so many schools and the Power Five that they need their version of Roger Goodell.
Okay, so who does that person answer to?
I mean, I guess it would be Mark Everett.
Well, it reminds me of
to do what Mark Emmert is supposed to be doing.
It's a good question.
Mark Emmert has never had any control over college football.
Well, no, that's not true. Not until the BCS playoffs.
Well, it's not the college football playoffs.
I mean BCS college football playoffs.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I don't think he runs that.
No, he doesn't. No, you said never.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't run any college football.
The NCAA never ran college football.
Not the bowl system, or really, it's the commissioners and the presidents that run it. It's not Mark Emmert. Not for football.
Right, but when you heard all the talk, the playoff talk that we used to discuss forever and ever, and he used to come out and say, "Well, they can't do it because of finals and classes." Then why was the NCAA even commenting on that? Why would they even put that stuff out there?
Yeah, well,
remember when we used to talk about that?
It was Roy Kramer and Mike Slive and Jim Delaney. All of the conference commissioners were the ones that really controlled the postseason in NCAA.
Well, there was no postseason. It was just bowls.
Yeah, and then you had, like I made the joke with Marquise this morning that, well, if you do this, Alabama will just, they can claim another title, because that's what you had back in the day, that you could have one school saying, well, I'm the national champion because AP said I was. Oh, I'm the national champion because, you know, so that I think is the era in which you're talking about. But, Darren, I don't know. I don't have an answer to your question of who that person answers to. Like in the NFL, Roger Goodell answers to the owners.
Well, who pays that person?
That's
who do they answer to? Who pays them? Well, those are pretty big questions.
Yeah, but
who paid Roger Goodell?
The owners.
Who pays Roger Goodell?
The owners. He's got 32 bosses.
Right. So that's what would have to happen.
You would have to form.
So you have 130. You have, what, 350 bosses in basketball? And who do you answer to? I mean, you
I believe who, another – like, they would have to form almost a new version of the NCAA. Like, there would have to be and this is where you get into –
Well, you're going down a whole different path.
No, I know. But essentially, that's
and you're,
what I
but
think
But you're starting happened. To hear it a lot more. And that would be the Power Five schools breaking away and forming their own deal.
Right, but that's not what Chase is saying. Chase is not saying break away Power Five and do your own thing. He's saying get a commissioner to oversee sports in the NCAA. And I've just said, okay, who do you answer to? Who pays you?
Well, yeah, I'm saying college
football.
Because
it sounds great. It sounds smart. But when you start thinking about the practicality of it, you're like, okay, who would it be? And Mitch made a really good point that I hadn't thought of, and that was, does this guy really have power? You know, it's like if you've ever seen the movie Eight Men Out, when baseball first put a commissioner in that place, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, right? There was no commissioner when the Black Sox scandal happened. And so basically, Kennesaw Mountain Landis said, and he was a judge at the time, I'll do this, but you've got to give me absolute power. I'm not going to sit here and be your puppet. You answer to me. I don't answer to you. And he was telling that to the owners. And that's what happened. He got that absolute power, and the owners had to give it to him because of the scandal of the Black Sox. But I'm not sure.
I just don't know how you make that work.
The conference commissioners would give up that kind of power.
No. Why would they? I mean, why, so you're saying these people that are already in charge and already powerful, you want them to sign up for them to say, hey, I want another boss. I want somebody. I want to answer to somebody else. You want them to sign up for that?
Well,
you're essentially asking them to do.
I know. I mean, and look, they might have to get together and form, you know, what Willie just brought up of actually the Power Five breaking away. That probably is more logical than just naming a college football commissioner. And that might be what they do. And then that commissioner, that person in charge, answers to them. So let's say it's the Power Five as currently constructed. They're the ones that those commissioners form a committee, and then they have somebody that's overseeing the rules. That may not accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish, but I understand how
you're kind of going down another path. I'm trying to focus on what you have thrown out all morning, that you want to see a football commissioner, and I'm just simply asking the first questions that come to mind, and it tells me that this is going to be way tougher because you don't have an answer. Like, who do you answer to? Who pays them?
As currently constructed, and I'm talking this out with you. I'm not. You know, this is what I'm trying to do. This was the whole conversation this morning, was us just talking this out. If Mark Emmert stays the head of the NCAA as he currently is, and he names a college football commissioner, do you think it works as currently constructed?
Is he over them? Is he over them?
Yes. He's the president.
He's over the whoever this college football commissioner is. He's
right, because I'm not saying college sports. I'm saying specifically college football, and basketball is another conversation. But this person is the college football commissioner.
Why would Bill Hancock and everybody in charge right now give that up? They're running college football right now, the playoffs. Why would they give that up?
Well, you got that. You got that factor, and also if there's a situation that would affect football players and other athletes, then what kind of jurisdiction does he have there, he or she?
Well, why would Bill Hancock be like, yeah, sure, that's great. I mean, we've had him on how many times over the years?
He probably wouldn't, but my whole point, that's the problem. That's why this conversation is coming up. You have too many people that are in charge.
But they are running football. They do. They're running football.
So they are, but they create a lot of issues. I mean,
what would change? What changes?
Well, I'm trying to get everybody uniformed. I'm trying to get everybody on the same page.
What changes with what we have someone running college football? What changes with a commissioner?
You have somebody running the playoffs.
Yeah, well, they still have to – they make decisions, right? So what changes? If you push them aside, then what does this commissioner do? What do they do that changes what's going on, why you've brought this up?
I believe that in a situation like we're currently in, if you have one voice that is running things, then you would have simplicity over some of the decisions that are trying to be made. And what I mean by that is, if you have a college football commissioner to come out, you're not going to make everybody happy, just like Roger Goodell doesn't make everybody happy. But you're going to have that person come out and say, listen, if half of the schools in the Power Five aren't able to open on time and not able to play, then we're going to have to move on and we're going to have to start this season because there are finances involved. Then the decision is made. You don't have arguing and bickering of, well, now we're going to do this and we're going to go do that. The decision's been made. You can have disagreements, but then you have one person that's making that call. I know that's an impossible decision to make, but that's the problem that we're in. And I understand what you're going to say, that, well, it could probably lead to that anyway, where you have half the schools playing. But I just feel like having one singular voice would help this and make this.
And who gets to determine this singular voice? You've got right now 130 bosses. The NFL owners, there's 32 bosses, and they choose who they want to be their commissioner. They choose because that person works for them. So now you have 130
bosses.
Yeah,
but they had to decide that at one point in time. I mean, so didn't the owners have to get together and say, hey, we need a commissioner, so we're going to name a commissioner?
Yeah, but they've agreed to do that. So you're acting like everybody's on board. Is everybody on board with this?
They may not be, but the hope is that you get everybody together and say, hey, this is what's on the table. We're proposing this. What do you think? It's obviously different because you have more schools than you do NFL teams. I understand it's not apples to apples, but...
And, of course, there's such a big variety between Middle Tennessee and Tennessee, or Ohio State and Ohio University. You know,
exactly.
There's such a huge different set of goals, standards, issues. That would be awfully hard to have one guy make the call for all of those because the interests just don't align in a lot of cases.
Who are they going to listen to, Ohio State's AD or Marshall's AD? If there's differing opinion, and you've got the Ohio State AD blowing this commissioner up, and you've got Marshall's AD blowing up about the same situation, but yet they're on two different sides of the fence, who do you think they're going to listen to?
They're going to listen to whichever school brings in the most money.
Exactly.
I understand that. So here's my question, and look, you are bringing up valid points, and I'm not arguing with you over that. Because I knew you would. Where do you think that there needs to be one, or do you think it's just impossible? Are you taking the stance that it's impossible?
It's impossible. The only way you're truly going to fix it, and you're not going to fix it, is if they break. Look, how long have they been talking about breaking away? I mean, how long have we heard that talk? If they were gonna going to do it, why haven't they just done it? I mean, what's stopping them? Why have we heard chatter about that for years and years and years? If they wanted to do it, they can do it. But why haven't they?
Because money talks.
Have you thought about that? Like, everybody's getting rich. So why would you leave the cow? I mean, you got the milk right here. You see where it is, but you want to go start up your own farm in hopes that there's going to be more cows and more milk? I mean, you have it right now. What's not working for them?
I guess that's the question. Can it be better?
If I'm sitting at Ohio University, I'm not thinking it's going to be better. If you're saying, well, we got to pony up for a commissioner who, at the end of the day, as you guys just said, money's going to talk.
Doesn't have their best interest.
Then our best interests are not going to be served. So I'm not voting for that. Now, I do think this could end up pushing for a lot of reasons, all of the things that are going on right now, because it is, as Mike Greenberg pointed out, on Get Up the other day, I was watching him. He said, this is really shining the light on the fact that the NCAA is so much about money. When you have all these people saying, we got to play the football season, we have to have the thing, and then the players are being put in a position where, you know, they don't have any say. There's no players association for football. If they get told to play, they're going to play. But they're maybe at the expense of their health, in the name of money, and they're not getting paid other than their scholarship. So this could be pushing things towards the Power Five conferences going off on their own, which West Durham was the first guy to float that out to me, and that was probably 8 or 10 years ago.
I
started laughing.
Yeah, it's been a decade.
Yeah, but you know, this has been in the works. People have had this idea for a while, and people have thought eventually it's going to move in that direction.
That's my point, Chase, is how do you get Chris Massaro and MTSU to say this is a great idea? It doesn't do anything for them. It doesn't do a damn thing for MTSU getting a football commissioner. Why would they sign up for that? They don't care about a commissioner, a football commissioner. It's basically getting back to what's been out there for what we were just talking about for the last decade. And I keep asking the question, well, if it's so important and if it's such a big deal, I'm wondering, is this media driven or is this actual commissioners and, you know, and ADs pounding their fist on a table saying we've got to have someone running college football? Is it them doing that or is this just more of a media driven thing that we've talked about for the last 10 years? Because I asked the question, if they wanted to do it, why don't they just do it? They have the power to do it. They can step away. They don't need the NCAA. You think the SEC needs the NCAA? Nope.
They but don't break you think away there needs
and do
to...
their own thing with the other four big conferences, and they all can get rich, and they all can keep doing what they're doing, and they don't have to listen to anything the NCAA. Now, it'll be a mess. It'll be an absolute mess. Somebody's got to be in charge of that.
Let me ask this. Do you think it's perfect right now? The answer is no. I'm sure.
Is it ever going to be perfect?
No. Nope. No. But do you believe that there could be more structure with college, let's just say college sports? Couldn't there be more structure?
Okay, you tell me. You've got 360 bosses in Division I basketball. You've got 130 bosses in college football. And then let's start going through all the other sports. There's a lot of people you got to answer to and appease. How do you make that work? How do you get everybody on the same page? I mean, think about it. When you bring up just college basketball alone, you are talking to 360 schools. Is that, I don't know, somewhere around there? Division I college basketball schools?
Yeah.
How do you get all those people on the same page and get them everybody happy and everybody satisfied?
You don't. At the end of the day, you don't. And that's where the other conversation that you brought up earlier that this was kind of headed down would be, you know, if they split into different divisions. I mean, that they may just have to do that. If I want to get what I want of having more structure, that you have Power Five, Group of Five, whatever. I mean, I know they already have Division One, Two, and Three, but even more split.
I guess just when I hear just a football commissioner, I just think it's impossible. It's just it doesn't make any sense. Like you're not going to get everybody to sign the smaller schools. It serves zero purpose for them, none. If you want a football commissioner to run the big boys football schools, that's one thing. But the smaller schools, they don't give a damn about a football commissioner.
Would that, in your opinion, would that be good for college football if they did split, if they went Power Five and Group of Five and just did their own thing? You even have a Group of Five champion?
We'll pick this up a little bit later in the show. We'll come back, Ryan McGee, to kick off the next hour. That's next.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.